From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Welcome to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this scorching hot but beautiful Monday. Man, oh man, do we have a lot to talk about as always here as we try to recap everything that happened over the weekend. In just a second, I'll be chatting with MSU Soccer and Lansing United beat writer for Impact Sports, Brooke Lambeer, about the whole fiasco that is the World Cup, and also Lansing United and so much more. We'll also chat about the NBA and NHL Finals as they both concluded over the weekend. Martin Keimer, how about him winning the U.S. Open? And a sad day in the world of baseball as we lose one of the gems in the game. All of that and so much more, but as custom here on Current Sports, we won't get to all of that before we get to our Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
I'm Alex Sharg, and these are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this Monday, June 16th. Roger City scored 10 runs over the course of two innings in the third and fourth, and left Fowler behind on Friday 11-1 in a Division IV semifinal at MSU's Sekia Stadium. Fowler finishes the season with a record of 26-7, and despite the loss, Fowler coach Kat Schmidt was proud of how far her team came this year. She said, quote, "We are very proud of our team. They have fought and had each other's backs the whole year, and you could just see at the end of the year, they continue to fight," end quote. To MSU track and field, it was a banner night for MSU junior Lee O'Connor, as she won the 3,000-meter steeplechase title on Friday at the 2014 NCAA Outdoor Track and Field Championships at Hayward Field. O'Connor set a school record with a time of 9:36 to become the first steeplechase champion in MSU history. She is the first Spartan outdoor champion since Safeda Fiennes won the 100-meter and 200-meter in 1997, and just the fifth women's NCAA outdoor champion in program history. It's her third All-America honor at the NCAA Outdoor Championships, following a fifth-place finish last season in the steeplechase. Overall, O'Connor is a four-time All-American, also earning first-time honors in the indoor mile earlier this season. Congrats to her. The Detroit Tigers got back on track and topped the Minnesota Twins this weekend, winning a three-game series 2-1. The Tigers wrapped up the series with a 4-3 win yesterday at Comerica Park after Torii Hunter sprinted home from third base on J.D. Martinez's not-so-deep fly ball in the ninth inning Sunday to give the Tigers the W. They're back in action tonight at home, beginning a four-game series versus the Kansas City Royals. Former MSU standout Draymond Green is hosting a youth basketball camp and all-star game later this month in Grand Rapids. The camp will take place on June 25th through the 27th in Grand Rapids and will host boys and girls from grades 2 to 9. The camp will end with a charity basketball game featuring former Spartan legends like Mateen Cleaves and Andre Hudson, along with current NBA players such as Marshawn Brooks and Jared Solinger. The All-Star game is set for June 27th, and proceeds from ticket sales will be donated to a charity to be announced later. Jimmy Johnson finally took the checkered flag at Michigan International Speedway, outlasting Kevin Harvick for the win. It's Johnson's third win in four races as the Hendrick Motorsports team continues its five-race winning streak. Wow. Michigan native Brad Keselowski finished third. The confetti rained down in San Antonio as the Spurs notch another easy win over the Heat to clinch their fifth NBA title, besting Miami in five games. After Miami took an early lead, San Antonio dominated the second and third quarters to win 104-87, their third consecutive win by at least 15 points. That's the first in finals history. Kawhi Leonard won the finals MVP, scoring 22 points and grabbing 10 rebounds for the game last night to seal the series. The LA Kings also won a championship of their own with a 3-2 double overtime victory against the New York Rangers on Friday, clinching the Stanley Cup in Game 5 of the NHL Finals. Defenseman Alec Martinez scored the game-winning goal off a rebound with 6 minutes to go in the second overtime. It's the second Stanley Cup for the Kings in the last three seasons. To golf, 29-year-old German Martin Kamer won the U.S. Open over the weekend. He began Sunday with a five-shot lead after hitting back-to-back rounds of 65 to start the tourney off Thursday-Friday at 10-under. On Sunday, He went 1-under for 69 on the final day, the only player in the final eight groups to hit under par. He now makes history as the first player from continental Europe to win the U.S. Open. And finally, in World Cup action, France and Switzerland came out winners in Group E over Honduras and Ecuador, and Argentina edged out a 2-1 victory in Group F. Other winners from Saturday and Friday were Italy over England 2-1, Ivory Coast, Cote d'Ivoire over Japan 2-1, Costa Rica over Uruguay 3-1, Mexico over Cameroon 1-0, Chile over Australia 3-1, and Netherlands upsetting Spain 5-1. The United States has its first game against Ghana today at 6 p.m. Brooks Lambier will be the guest on Current Sports today, and he'll break the World Cup all down. Those are your Current Sports Quick Hit headliners. The lines are now open. Time to send it back to Al to start the show.
All right. Thanks a lot, Alex. So much happened over the weekend. My goodness. Before I start the show, I definitely want to give a shout out to the Fowler softball team. What a run for them. What an incredible team. Again, their dreams were cut just short on Friday as Roger City, again, they scored 10 runs over the course of two innings. They were just in a complete zone. Fowler fell to Roger City 11-1 in that Division 4 semifinal. Current Sports was there. Our own intern, Andre Sims, took a trip out there and shot some highlights. You can catch all of that action this week on Current Sports TV. You can catch all of that and so much more again Wednesday night at 6 p.m. We have an interesting episode this week as we're kind of diving into an interesting social issue or discussion, if you will, when you talk about the world of sports, specifically the world of officiating. Referee abuse, folks. Yes, we actually did a whole week of this. I remember last summer. Last summer, we kind of dove into referee abuse in lieu of the whole situation that went down with a certain referee. It didn't take place in Michigan, but a situation happened out of Michigan around the state of, I believe it was Texas, in which a referee was heckled and actually beaten to death after a football game, a high school football game. It made the news, made headliners everywhere. And really sparked up a discussion on referee abuse. And we're going to talk to a referee who actually was on the show last summer during that week-long special, Dan Jimenez. Yes, Dan is a great, great friend of the show. He actually is just finishing up high school officiating for the MHSAA as the high school season is now done as far as baseball is concerned. His last event was the Diamond Classic. Dan, again, a great guy. I'll be sitting down with him and chatting about the issue of referee abuse Wednesday night at 6 p.m. on WKAR-TV. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, you can do so by signing up online for free at WKAR.org. And ladies and gents, also, before I start the show, I have to mention this. Some sad news coming out of the world of baseball.
Smith is ready. Gwynn waiting to pitch. There's a drive, right center field, base hitter, there it is! Ho-ho, doctor! You can hang a star on that, baby! A star for the ages for Tony Gwynn, number 3,000. Well, the entire Padre ball club is heading to first base to congratulate Tony. The entire team is out there.
Yeah, some sad news, folks. The San Diego Padres, they confirmed via Twitter that Major League Baseball Hall of Famer Tony Gwynn died. He passed away today, ladies and gents. Oh, boy, the tweet read, quote, "We are terribly sad to say goodbye to our teammate, our friend, and a legend, Tony Gwynn. Rest in peace, Mr. Padre." That's what the tweet read. Now, the former outfielder died today at the age of 54 at Pomerado Hospital in Poway, California. That's according to a release from the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. Gwynn had cancer. Gwynn was elected to the National Baseball Hall of Fame in 2007, amassing a total of, let's look at these numbers, folks, 3,141 hits in 20 seasons with the San Diego Padres from 1982 all the way to 2001. He won 8 National League batting championships and finished his career batting over 300. Boy, oh boy, a sad day. If you cover Tony Gwynn and if you've seen any of his highlights and just have, you know, watched him on TV throughout the years, you always notice, you know, his smile and just his uncanny ability to you know, just love the game of baseball and to teach it. He was such a great teacher of the game as well. Tony Gwynn, sadly, passing away again victim of cancer, passing away at the age of 54. All right, folks, again, we have a great show in store for you all. Our phone lines are going to be open, as we always do each and every weekday here on Current Sports. You can pick up that phone and talk about anything on your noggin in the world of sports. Dial 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527 to talk about anything that's on your noggin. Of course, we will be chatting in our second segment about the new champions in the world of hockey and pro basketball. How about the Los Angeles Kings and the San Antonio Spurs? The LA Kings getting one remarkable win on Friday night in double overtime. A thrilling game. I tell you what, that is one resilient team, folks. That's their second championship in the last 3 years. We'll talk about the LA Kings. And how about the Spurs? You know, starting that game last night, I thought the Miami Heat were going to pull one out. At least I thought they at least had one more bullet in the tank. One more. But, you know, the San Antonio Spurs, they really just took advantage in that second half and kind of ran away with things. They are the deserving champions. And we have a lot of questions now on the future of the Heat, you know, that we'll kind of chat about here, and also the future of the Spurs, because they're, you know, a lot of those veterans on that team, they're not young. And we'll talk about the future of the Spurs and whether or not they can continue this dominance each and every year. It's remarkable. One of the storied franchises, not just the NBA, but in sports. The way they've won their championships, there's no I at all in that team. And it's remarkable to watch. So we'll chat about that. How about Martin Keimer winning the U.S. Open? He was in a complete zone all weekend. And we'll talk about the Tigers, who get a much-needed series win over the weekend to the Minnesota Twins. So again, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But I tell you what, even, you know, with the NBA Finals and the NHL Finals and, you know, the Tigers, I mean, many people are glued to their TVs to watch all of that. Now that, you know, NBA basketball and NHL hockey are now done, I tell you what, even, you know, even with those two things going on, just looking at those things in general, they still can't eclipse this event. The World Cup, folks, soccer has really, I can't turn on my TV and turn into ESPN or Fox Sports without seeing, you know, at least one highlight or some analyst breaking down the games of the day and breaking down the World Cup. And I tell you what, we have our very own soccer expert, if you will, right here on Current Sports Today. He is the man, the myth, the legend, MSU Soccer and Lansing United beat writer for Impact Sports. It is my pleasure to welcome right now Brooks Lambier for the first time here on Current Sports. How you doing, Brooks? Thanks for joining me.
Oh, good, Al. How you doing, man?
Oh, very well. I'm a little sad, though. I will say that, because now hockey, you know, the NHL playoffs are done now. The NBA playoffs are now done now. And now it's like, where do I shift my focus to? I tell you what, normally, on a normal year, like last year and the years past, you know, not in this whole four-year thing with the World Cup. In years past, I would just normally tune into baseball. But now this incredible event called the World Cup is taking place. I'm excited to dive into it with you. But before we get into the World Cup, Brooks, I also want to talk about Lansing United, which we'll talk about right now. First of all, you know, Brooks, looking at this Lansing United team, if I'm looking at the standings correctly here, in the Great Lakes West Conference standings, of course, Lansing United is the minor league soccer team for Lansing. This is their first season. We had Jeremy Sampson to talk about this incredible squad before the season kicked off. Right now, as of things sit right now, they are tied in second place with the Indiana Fire at 4-2-2 right now. That's how their record leads. Detroit City, they lead the conference right with 5-2-0. And I gotta ask you, just how good is this Lansing United team? Brooks, you've been at each and every game, I'm assuming, and really been covering this team through thick and thin. What are your thoughts on it so far?
Well, they have a great combination of players. We have guys from England that Jeremy has brought in over who are very prolific players. Matt Brown, leading goal scorer, one of the big goal scorers in the league, has scored most of the Lansing United goals. Great player. You know, we also have some very good Division I players. We've got five guys from Michigan State. You know, we have Ryan Keener and Tim Kreutz. We also have Zach Bennett, our goalkeeper as well, who's played very well. You know, we have some great kids from Western Michigan and Oakland University as well. And, you know, some smaller schools, Division III NAIA schools. But this team has been playing very well, and they're in a little bit of a struggle a little bit now, only getting 1 point last weekend and losing away at Cincinnati. But let's hope this week off can regenerate the team.
Yeah, you know, and I saw the highlights of that Cincinnati game, and, you know, one of the goals, I mean, sometimes, you know, looking at Eric Rutland's comments after the game, I mean, sometimes it's just the way the cookie crumbles, because they had some goals, especially the one where Zach Bennett blocks it and the ball flies in back of him and bounces into the net. I mean, sometimes it's just unfortunate, right?
Yeah, soccer's a funny game. It's not as direct, I guess, as a basketball or football game. Funny things happen. The better team sometimes doesn't win, so that's what happens at times.
You know, we had Jeremy on this show not too long ago, Brooks. Jeremy, the owner of course, Lansing United, has really been the spark plug in getting this whole thing off the ground. Jeremy really talked about how this first year is really going to be one with a lot of question marks, you know, especially when it comes to fans coming out to the games. I went to the first game, the very first game of Lansing United, and I tell you what, looking at the response and looking at how many people came out to that game, it really, really was encouraging for the future of this squad. And looking at the local support that this team has been getting at the home games, has that really been exceeding your expectations? What did you think about when you heard about this team being formed here? Did you think they would bring out the crowds they've brought out so far, Brooks?
Yeah, I did have a question about how many people would come out to this, because it's amateur soccer. You know, these guys aren't being paid. But, you know, Jeremy has really advertised this as a community thing. He wants to get the community involved. So, you know, last game against Cleveland, they had over 1,000 people come out to that game.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was in awe. I was like, you know, this guy's in the press box saying, hey, I think we have a lot of, like, more than our first game here.
Yeah, it was more than the first game. Yeah,
It was crazy. So yeah, I'm loving it. I love the soccer atmosphere. The Sons of Ransom probably need a little more supporters, but, you know, that's going to grow as each year goes on. But it's been a great venue.
Well, you heard it from Brooks himself, folks. The Sons of Ransom is kind of the cheer squad, the Izzone, if you will. It's kind of, you know, to equip it to, you know, a local feel here at MSU. It's kind of like the Izzone, where you have your own, the fans going nuts in the stands. It's pretty cool stuff. Ladies and gents, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we're talking with MSU soccer and Lance United beat writer for Impact Sports, Brooks Lambeer. Now, you know, how often, I got to ask you this, Brooks, because you really have really covered this game, you know, this and this team, you know, throughout the season so far. How often do you see guys get drafted to the pros when you talk about minor league soccer?
I mean, it's a way for guys to get scouted. You know, the traditional way is obviously college soccer, or such as the U.S. Development Academy program, which is the highest level for youth soccer, where a lot of guys, that's where you get into the homegrown, the Adidas generation players. It gets a little complicated. But most of the guys, if you're going to play professional soccer, usually you're going to college or you're getting scouted at the youth level. And, you know, you sign with the team, or the academy keeps you for the professional team or the 23 team. As far as amateur soccer, I mean, USL Pro, which is higher than NPSL, probably you're more likely where you're probably going to get a shot. I don't know really of anyone out of NPSL that really has gotten a pro contract out of playing in the league. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure it's probably happened. I just don't know of anyone in mind right now.
Brooks, when you talk to these players who are a part of the Lansing United soccer team, I mean, is that the eventual goal for them? That's what they're chasing, right?
For some of them, it is. You know, guys want to play somewhere. I know we have a guy, Tyler Pascher, who did play out in Iceland professionally. He's looking to play somewhere else. You know, Eric knows him. That's why he got him on the team. Mm. You know, we have the guys from England. They play in a lower tier division. They don't play, you know, the top three divisions, which are the best ones in England. You know, we have a guy that plays professional soccer in Jamaica, Brian Cunningham.
Wow.
You have a different tier of guys. And then as far as the college guys, the summer soccer season, I don't know if it's so much to get scouted. It is more to prepare you for your college season. It's more of like a spring football type of thing. I mean, we do have, in college soccer does have spring soccer, but it is more of like a spring football type of thing.
Gotcha. It has that type of feel. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, you know what, Brooks? You know, looking at, you know, this team, it's really remarkable, because I never thought there would be a minor league soccer team in this area. I didn't think we'd ever see it. Again, Jeremy has really been the guy to really spearhead this whole thing. How big was it for a team to be founded in Lansing, not only this year, but it being a World Cup year as well? How big does that add to the whole soccer fiasco here in the area?
I mean, it adds to it. Jeremy has definitely done a lot of stuff with his, advertisers saying that, hey, we're going to watch the World Cup soccer game. And actually, the last game they play against Detroit City FC, which would be at DeMartin Stadium, is the final day of the World Cup. So that's going to be huge. So it just, and all in that, with this World Cup going on, and then his first NPSL season with Lansing United. You know, it couldn't go probably any better for him right now, to be honest.
That's great stuff. Exactly. It just adds to the whole soccer fiasco that is, of course, the World Cup. Now let's dive into the World Cup here, Brooks. The USA, you know, I was actually on the Impact website not too long ago, a great website, by the way, and you guys kind of broke down the World Cup. I want to get your thoughts right here live on the air of the World Cup. We've seen kind of some stunners so far. Spain. That Spain game really was one that stood out to me and said, oh my gosh, Spain is out now? Really, it's crazy. Well, I couldn't believe they lost. Now, for you, Brooks, looking at this World Cup year, USA, they haven't played yet. They play Ghana today at 6 p.m. What are your expectations for the USA team this year?
Well, I mean, from watching all the media on ESPN, just listening in, and then taking my views, I think they can get out of this group. Now, it's very slim, but currently, as we speak, Portugal and Germany are playing. Portugal's down 3-0. Their great defender, Pepe, just got a red card for headbutting a guy. So
I was listening to that on the drive here to work, actually. Mm-hmm. That was a good, yeah.
Yes, and that'll be good for the U.S. because that's a key defender for Portugal. So in the next game, after they play Ghana, that'll be good for the United States. But realistically, back to that, I think they can get out. It's just going to be tough. They need to beat Ghana. They need to tie... They need to tie Portugal or beat them, and then they have to – hopefully they can at least draw with Germany, who's the powerhouse in the group.
So what do you think is going to happen tonight?
Tonight, I think the U.S. can walk out with the win. I'll go 2-1.
2-1 U.S.
I'll say 2-1. You know, I love the U.S. I love their offense and their defense. It's the midfield you want to watch out for. Our guys moving for each other. Against Turkey – the U.S. played a diamond shape in the middle, which opened up spaces for Turkey to play, to get through and to have shots. Mm-hmm. And then when they played against Nigeria, they played more of a flat four in front of their back four. So that'll be interesting. And then also another thing to look is none of these defenders have played in a World Cup together that are going to be in the U.S. back line. So that's something to look forward to. Michael Bradley as a playmaker in the midfield.
Is that a blessing or a curse in soccer? I mean, these guys are first time. I mean, that's the chemistry isn't there, right?
These guys know each other. I mean, if you ask a lot of the professional soccer experts, you know, it's not a blessing for them.
Right.
It's something difficult, but you know, that's how soccer is. Though, when you get to these higher ranks, you got to learn to play with other people. And I think they've had enough time in camp to learn how to play with each other. So it's all about communication on the soccer field. It gets loud. You need to be vocal. You need to tell everyone where the ball is, where's the player, where everyone's moving on the field. That's the key thing.
All right, Brooke. So your overall prediction on who is going to host that World Cup final trophy? I mean, we had a kind of a preview of it last week. We're not soccer experts. Just going off the stats and going off the trends. I believe we have to go back, Alex. I think Argentina was one of them, and I think who did I have winning? I totally forgot who I had winning. But for you, Brooks, if you had to predict right now, you've done your preview show. I took a peek at it. Mm-hmm. Who do you think is going to win this whole thing? What two teams is it going to come down to? I think I had Brazil winning. I think Brazil is who I want. I had winning. Yeah.
I mean, from the way the Netherlands destroyed Spain in that first game, I mean, to come out with their formation of 3-5-2, and to take Spain their midfield out of the game, you know, and they have prolific scorers in Robin van Persie and Ayun Robin, and you know they were in that game. They wanted that win because of what happened in the 2010 final. So I would say Netherlands. You know, I like Brazil, but I think they're young. Mm-hmm. I think the pressure is going to kind of cave on them because the last time it was hosted in Brazil in 1950, they lost as well. And Brazil loves their soccer, as we all know.
Right.
I think the pressure is going to cave in on them. I like Belgium as well. Very good team, a lot of EPL, English Premier League players, very strong players, and why not Germany? But I think I like the Netherlands to maybe win their first one ever this year.
Gotcha. I can see that. Well, they certainly are off to one impressive start, to say the least, Brooks. Now, for you, we had a debate here last week on Current Sports on whether or not the World Cup is hands down the biggest sporting event in the world. And, you know, the Super Bowl certainly came up in that discussion. The Olympics came up in that discussion. I want to get your thoughts. Do you think, you know, looking at the entire realm of sports and looking at a sporting event such as the Super Bowl and, you know, the big events, the Olympics, even throw that in there. Do you think the World Cup eclipses all of that? And why or why not?
Easily it does. Easily. You're getting people that are going out to bars, pubs, watching at home, all over the world, and it brings people together. It's very unique, and it's very beautiful thing. Especially when you watch the games, you see all the different fans. You'll see Brazilian fans with the Brazilian shirts on. If it's not a Brazil game, everyone dresses up. It takes the world by storm when it's a World Cup year. So I think it easily eclipses the Olympics. The Super Bowl, very only much an American thing.
Right, exactly.
It's big in America, and as much as Americans watch it, but the World Cup definitely.
But why so much the Olympics? Because the Olympics, I mean, the thing about the Olympics is you have every country in the world represented at the Olympics just about, and, you know, you see everybody banding together to watch it. But still, the World Cup, I mean, with it being, it is the most popular sport in the world. Mm-hmm. Why do you think it eclipses an event such as the Olympics?
Well, I think because so many guys represent different countries, for one. Mm-hmm. And then also some players also have parents that kind of, you know, are, for instance, Julian Green for the United States. His mom's German, but his dad's American. So you have that kind of going on
right. For
players as well. And then you have guys, because they play in different clubs all over the world. You guys are playing in Japan for club soccer. African players playing in England. So everything just really intertwines because as a guy that loves club soccer as well, when you watch the EPL, you fall in love with these players watching them in the EPL, and then you want to see what can they do more for their team in the World Cup, such as a Luis Suarez and Daniel Sturridge, who I'm a big Liverpool fan.
Right.
And, you know, I want to see, you know, Daniel Sturridge scored, Luis Suarez didn't play the first game against Costa Rica, but, you know, I want to see what can they do for their country, and can these players bring their team together and perform on the highest stage in soccer.
So. Brooks, your love and fandom for the game of soccer is so evident in the way you speak. I got to ask you, when did your love for the game of soccer start?
I've always played soccer since I was in kindergarten. And, I wanted to play college soccer. I had an offer from a D3 school, Trine University in Indiana.
Really?
I did. But I felt like I wanted to play D1 soccer. But I played it all my life. It's a great sport. I don't want to say not many people understand it, but to find the love and passion for it, you really have to understand the game, and you really have to, and people don't like how it's slow sometimes, but that's just part of what certain teams do different things. Some teams play more direct where they want to get the ball from the defense to the forwards quicker. Some people, like Spain, like to knock the ball around and pass it around. Mm-hmm. So I love all of it, and I love all sports as well. You know, football, baseball, I'm passionate about sports, but soccer I'm really passionate about.
It sounds like me with the game of basketball. It kind of adds to that love, mm-hmm, when you actually have played the sport as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so when you got that offer coming out of high school, I mean, you said, hey, if no Division I schools are knocking at my door, maybe I should hang up the cleats then, huh?
Yeah, I played club soccer for a year, you know, in college my first year, and it was just kind of something where it's like it didn't feel the same. I like the competitiveness. I was like, you know, might as well stick to learning my degree and, you know, getting passionate about this and trying to give people, you know, the knowledge I have and to discuss things such as with you, Al, or anyone else on any other, anyone walks by or who I talk to about it. So, yeah.
Brooks, why is the game of soccer, in your opinion, the most popular game in the world?
I mean, with the passion. I mean, there's just so much. You ever watch the best part of a soccer game is when you're watching professionally in the EPL or in the World Cup. Mm-hmm. Listen when they score a goal. Goes in the back of the net, screams from fans, and everyone's dancing around, and everyone's got their cultural thing. Like Ivory Coast, they have their little maraca type things. They're knocking around,
right.
And then South Africa with the vuvuzelas.
You can't help but hear those things.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing to listen to that.
Right.
You know, my dad doesn't like because it's a little annoying. You know, that's how he is. But I can tune it out. But then when someone scores in here, yeah, and then everyone's clapping and going crazy, and then the players run to the side and they do their little dances or chants, or they go to the crowd and they point.
Right.
It just it rush adrenaline through your body, and you get goosebumps.
You do.
I'm getting goosebumps right now. So yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Right now you can
right
just
now,
thinking
I'm
about
goosebumps.
It.
Yeah.
I love that, Brooks. Yeah. You know, another aspect to this whole thing that I always take in consideration as well is when you look at the game of soccer, it's not expensive to play. All you need is a ball. That's it. All you need is a ball. You can probably set up a goal with two trash cans or something, you know? It's so inexpensive to play. And when you look at rural countries there are so many countries around the world who are going through so many tough economical times. To take your mind off things and to find a sport that you can enjoy and that's you don't have to spend a lot of money on, soccer is the ideal sport for that. And I think it's just a natural thing in, you know, countries like Africa and England. I mean, for just people to kind of pick up on it, I think that aids in it as well, right?
Oh, for sure. You know, kids in Africa and South America are playing, you know, on dirt fields with goals. And,
right.
You know, it's a lot less than what we play with here in America, you know, where we have nice grass fields. You know, even some of the Lancer United guys that came over from England said some of our soccer fields are nicer than the ones in England. So,
right.
You know, but like you said, all you need is a soccer ball. You don't even need 11-on-11. You can play with 5-on-5. You just play with the shorter field. So, you know, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful game.
It definitely is. Well, hey, Brooks, I thank you so much for joining me on Current Sports today to talk about it. There you have it. Brooks Lambeer, beat writer for the MSU soccer team and Lancer United for Impact Sports. Hey, Brooks, we got to do this again, man. We got to have you on when the World Cup's done. How's that sound?
Yeah, sounds great, man.
Brooks, thanks a lot for joining me today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Al.
All right, folks. Well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we'll talk about the NBA Finals and NHL Finals. They are in the books, ladies and gents. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and each and every Monday here on the show, we have a lot of fun, especially when it comes to our music, as you see. Yes, that's Michael Jackson playing in the background. It is Martist Mondays. Martist Mondays, ladies and gents, is where we play a certain artist here on the show. Just one artist here on each and every Monday on the show. But the catch is, that artist has his name has to start with the letter M. Michael Jackson is our artist for today, as you see. Thanks a lot, Alex, for cutting those. Gotta love that. Well, ladies and gents, the NBA Finals are in the books. What a remarkable outing for the San Antonio Spurs as they just handed it to the Miami Heat to close out that series. Oh, my goodness.
Kawhi Leonard, if I had told you when the NBA Finals began that you would be the most valuable player of this series, you would have said what?
Man, I would have told you was lying or something. But right now, it's just surreal to me. I had a great group of guys behind me. Just pushing me, just wanting me to do, to be aggressive in the game, and they just helped me out.
Now, everybody knows the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs have a big three. Why were you the guy in this finals?
Man, I'm not sure. I guess I just, they said I have the talent. I could go out there every night, and they just told me I got to keep being aggressive every night for us to win this series. They all pushed me, Coach Pop pushed me, the fans pushed me, and I just want to thank God, my parents, and everybody.
It's okay to smile now, Kawhi.
Say that again.
It's okay to smile now.
Man, it's all surreal to me right now.
Well, congratulations. Kawhi Leonard is the youngest Finals MVP since 1999, when Tim Duncan was also 20 years old.
Wow, gotta love that again. Kawhi Leonard, you just heard it from Stuart Scott on the coverage of that game on ESPN's ABC last night. The San Antonio Spurs are the champions of the basketball world. Again, they clinched a victory last night with a 104-87 win. Man, my goodness, again, Kawhi Leonard, your finals MVP. He scored 22 points, grabbed 10 rebounds to steal the series. And you know what? This was pretty inevitable for me. Watching this team, I did think, like as I said at the top of the hour, I did think that the Miami Heat had one final breath before they suffocated in the series. But, you know, I guess I was wrong. You know, looking at how they started that game, I remember, you know, I got home late, a little late last night, caught the game around the second half in the third quarter, and I happened to pass the television. I happened to be on campus, and I passed the television that had the game on, and the Heat were really giving it to the San Antonio Spurs. And I said, okay, well, here's Miami's one final win for the series. But, you know, in complete San Antonio fashion, that consistency that we had seen in the past few games before last night's game really showed in that second half, and they got back to just playing as a team, and you started to see the tide turn. It was remarkable. You have to appreciate what exactly we saw in this year's NBA Finals. You know, we harp on a lot. You know, not to beat it to death. You know, I feel like I'm bringing it up every single time I talk about this NBA Finals series, but it's really the reality for me. You have to really appreciate how this San Antonio Spurs team is able to put together consistent success without having a, you know, legit, you know, one superstar who you can just give the ball to and just ISO everybody out. This team plays as a team. This team plays basketball the way it should be played. The ball movement, the unselfish, uncanny passes, it's unbelievable to watch what the Spurs have been able to put together. You have a guy like Tim Duncan, a leader like Tim Duncan, who has now started for a championship team in three separate decades. The only man in NBA history to do that. It's unbelievable. And a guy like Greg Popovich, the perfect leader for this team. He's a guy, and we always bring this up with Pop, because he's a guy who's going to get in your face, yell at you, and tell you what you need to be doing if you're not doing it. And you rarely see that in the NBA game because, frankly, you have a lot of prima donnas in the game. Yeah, just imagine. Can you imagine Eric Spoelstra yelling at a LeBron James? Can you imagine that? Can you imagine, a coach for the Lakers yelling at a Kobe Bryant? I mean, that'd be a quick bite back, I tell you. But you see it all the time with Greg Pop. He gets in the face of guys like who are superstars, like Tony Parker and Ginobili and Timmy, and they just take it and they say they may banter a little bit back and forth, you know, but it's a healthy banter just to get on the same page when it comes to winning. It reminds me sort of how Tom Izzo is with his players here at Michigan State. I mean, you see Tom losing his mind on the sidelines, and he's not afraid to get in somebody's, you know, get in somebody's rear end about something that he feels they should be doing on the court, and he usually gets a response from his players. Popovich is able to do that on the professional level, in the NBA Prima Donna League, as I like to call it, and it's remarkable to watch. Alex, what are your thoughts on this series? Because I really appreciate it from a basketball fan's perspective. I really appreciated just how this team was able to win and how they've been able to be consistently successful year after year after year. It's remarkable.
Yeah, it's appreciative. But what I'm most dumbfounded about is the consistent dodging of the LeBron James dominance in this series. Every single time someone asks a question to Spoelstra, to LeBron, to Wade, whether LeBron is taking it all under his wing, Spoelstra and all those other people just dodge the question. And I know it's taking it away. It's totally taking away from the Spurs' great performance because of the whole LeBron saga. Like, I feel like the Spurs finals this year will automatically be kind of tainted because of LeBron James and the decision and the 4-6 year plan with the Heat. And I feel like no matter what, that's always going to be in conversation. But you're right. It's impressive. It speaks that it's exquisite basketball from the Spurs' point of view. And as we saw a couple days ago, Duncan is not thinking about retirement at all.
No, it certainly didn't seem like it after the game, even though he kind of died some questions on the future and whatnot. And so did LeBron, of course, with his future. But yeah, I definitely see where you're coming from, because when you look at this final series, I don't want the story to become what was wrong with the Miami Heat. I want it to be what was right about the San Antonio Spurs. And I definitely see where you're coming from, because LeBron James, and it's funny because a good friend of mine who I grew up with, his name is Carl. He's listening right now, I believe. He's afraid to pick up the phone and dial, though. He always is every time
It's not easy.
But hey, I'm just saying. And I always call him out about it. I called him out last night about it, and I immediately kind of rubbed it in his face, because he's one of those bandwagon. I'm gonna call him a bandwagon fan. He's one of those bandwagon Miami Heat fans who was not born and raised in the city of Miami, does not even know, it hasn't even been to the city of Miami, let alone is raised in the city of Miami, but is a fan because of LeBron, and they're a huge LeBron James fan. And, you know, you see it all the time on Instagram and your timeline. You probably know a few of them. And, you know, he's a guy that when the Heat lost, he was just so upset. And, you know, I just kind of rubbed in his face a little bit and said, hey, that's the way you play basketball. The Spurs deserve a championship. And he got so mad last night. But it just, you know, and he talks about how LeBron has no help. And he's exactly right. I definitely agree with him. I actually sent a pretty funny Instagram pic last night that had a picture of it said team photo. You know those memes that they have on Instagram?
Yeah.
It was a team photo, right? It said team photo, and it had LeBron James, and he was posing with a bunch of trash bags around him. You know what that means, right? And I agree. I thought that LeBron James, probably, you can argue that LeBron James this year, and comparing it to his years in Cleveland, he probably had more help in Cleveland than he did this year when you look at this championship run. Because Dwayne Wade, he's a guy, especially looking at, and that was a question for me, looking at this finals on the longevity throughout an entire season for Dwayne Wade. Even though he sat out a lot of the season, still his longevity in this whole playoff run, you saw him start to slow down. He had a few gems, ladies and gents, but in the finals, I mean, looking at those last few games, Dwayne Wade just wasn't there. Chris Bosh didn't show up. He was horrible last night. Mario Chalmers is a guy, a point guard, who turns the ball over so much, and his shooting is inconsistent. He got really no bench production other than a few Ray Allen threes here and there, but Ray is also old. And a lot of people forget the Miami Heat are the oldest team in the NBA. So now the question really comes in, naturally, on what's the future of LeBron? Is he going to stay with this team? I don't see LeBron staying, to be honest with you, unless a huge move is made. And I think that huge move that's in the works, in the rumor talks right now, I don't know if you heard about it, Alex, but there's a rumor that possibly Carmelo Anthony could be joining the Miami Heat next season.
That would definitely change some things.
That would keep him in a Miami Heat jersey, I think. But if a drastic move like that doesn't happen, I don't see him staying. And why would you stay?
Yeah, well, a couple things. First, on you wishing that it was not what was wrong with the Heat and what was great about the Spurs, one thing to note is that many NBA players watching that game last night and other athletes, they kind of got that mentality. They themselves didn't want it to be about how bad the Heat were.
Because they understand the game.
And if you looked on Twitter, and if for those of you who are listening who didn't catch the game or aren't really too big on Twitter, many of the athletes speak their minds, that have verified accounts, that it's purely their thoughts. And every single athlete that I watched in the NBA last night on Twitter was talking about how great the Spurs were, team basketball, and just how LeBron shouldn't be in the conversation, first of all, when it comes to that. So to kind of end this conversation, I think the athletes get it. We both want it to be that way, but there's going to be a taint on it.
Do you think, I got to ask this question too, because these Carmelo Anthony talks seem to really be gaining headway now. Do you think it will be bad for the NBA and the game of basketball in general if Carmelo was to take his talents to South Beach?
No, I don't think it'll be bad, because it's still going to put dollars in the seats, Al.
I think it'll be terrible.
Why do you think it's going to be bad?
I think it'll be terrible because I hate, and I've gone on record to saying this in the past.
But for the NBA, for the NBA.
Yeah, for the NBA. I think it still would be bad for the NBA because I hate when superstars link up and take the easy way out. That's why LeBron James got a lot of criticism, and that's why there's so many LeBron haters, because of the whole decision to go down to South Beach and the fiasco behind it to link up with one of the best players in the NBA, two best players in the NBA, with Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade. Now you add Carmelo to that mix now. It just, like, you know, what happened to earning it? You know what I mean? It really, for me, you know, you didn't have Michael Jordan calling up Magic Johnson or Larry Bird and Magic linking up to win an NBA championship. These guys wanted to beat each other. I believe that the NBA now has really dwindled down in the whole C word category, that C word being competitiveness. Guys don't want to earn anything anymore. Everybody wants the easy way out. And for me, if Carmelo does that, he's taking the easy way out.
Al,
without a doubt.
You could look at it that way. But at
that
the same,
is how it is.
No, well, yeah, it is how it is. It's the first time that three superstars have sat down at lunch, talked about, you know,
linking up to win an NBA
linking
champ.
Up.
It's ridiculous.
They're at their peak. It's not,
ridiculous.
It's not like Kobe and Shaq, where Shaq comes, he's not a superstar yet, and then he becomes a superstar. It's three guys, like you said, Bosh on Toronto, Wade on the Heat, LeBron in Cleveland. They all link up. They're all averaging 20
it's
and
ridiculous.
10.
Ridiculous.
Right. But Al, the bright side of this is, although that's the first time it's happened, it's not working. It's not working.
That's what I love. That's why I was so glad
right.
that the Spurs were one of those examples that
so,
team basketball isn't dead yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but at the same time, it's not working, which means that although it could happen again, it's not the winning formula, as the Spurs just showed. Yeah, the Heat won back-to-back, and they did come up for a couple years, but superstars are called superstars for a reason. What goes up must come down, and Bosh and Wade are not nearly the superstars they were four years ago.
No,
and I feel
not.
That if Carmelo came, that the same kind of thing would happen, where over time dwindling, with the exception
right.
of LeBron,
but then, hey,
they will falter.
That's what they will win a championship if Carmelo comes over here, I think. They will win another one, I think. And I just hate seeing just superstars link up. Because I feel as though if it does happen, it hasn't happened, but it's the easy way out. And I wouldn't respect it.
But keep in mind, if superstars link up, then you're stuck with the Heat where you're getting the Rashard Lewis's and the Shane Battier's and the guys that are minimum cap that are looking to link
perform
on.
Perform well on the draft.
Right.
You know, make some moves and get some good role players. Strengthen that bench. They have a lot of other areas of need other than grabbing a Carmelo Anthony right now. He will definitely help offensively, but there's some other needs in that team that definitely need to be addressed. But, all right, well, I'll tell you what. The NHL Finals were also thrilling way to close out this series.
Green, meanwhile, it's played along to him. Centering pass flagged down by Green. Played into traffic, though. Starting back up with it now is Martinez in a 3-on-2. Clifford gave it across. It's held in a shot. Save. Rebound. Score. And Martinez.
Yes, a 3-2 double overtime victory against the New York Rangers on Friday night. For the Los Angeles Kings clinching the Stanley Cup in Game 5. Wow, what a remarkable way to end that series, even though, I mean, it ended in 5 games. But, you know, we all kind of saw this one coming, Alex. But I tell you what, the LA Kings, they are so resilient, dude. I mean, this is such a resilient hockey team. If you look at this, they after fighting through 3 straight 7-game series... 3 straight to emerge from the tough Western Conference. The Kings, they won the first 3 games of the finals, starting with consecutive OT wins on goals by Justin Williams and Brown. I mean, the way they didn't just coast. They didn't coast through this NHL playoffs. They had to earn each and every series win, each and every game. That's what was so impressive to me. When you thought the Kings were finally going to be buried and you can bury them and said, okay, this is not the year for them, they showed up and responded to each and every challenge. That was what was so impressive for this run from the LA Kings. Now they've won, 2 championships in the last 3 seasons? It's unbelievable. Now, New York didn't go without a fight. I think they did deserve to be there because, for me, New York, to push that final game to a double overtime and to win the previous game of that one when, again, they were facing elimination, that showed a lot about their character and that they weren't just going to lay down and hand the Stanley Cup over to the LA Kings. New York deserved to be there. They just got beat in a lot of clutch moments. We talk about puck luck, a lot of puck luck moments and a lot of just gritty, gritty situations in which the Kings handled better.
Yeah, and the other thing about that is, aside from New York deserving to be there, they are losing off puck bounces, like you said, in overtime, in double overtime. It's not like it's going 2-3 periods and they're losing off puck. I mean, they're grinding every single minute of this series. And who knows, some of those games New York easily could have won.
Right,
so
right.
No matter what, at the end of the day, one of the best final series, NHL Stanley Cup series I've seen in probably the last 5 years. 2 great teams. Great for the NHL because you have the New York and the LA markets,
right.
A New York team that never, ever goes that far. So you couldn't ask for anything better. For me, one of the most entertaining NHL Stanley Cup series I've seen.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, you wouldn't think that it would be that way looking at how it ended. I mean, it was a five-game series, only one game going in the Rangers' favor. But looking at, I mean, what you had three overtime games and one to start, you know, the series. It was unbelievable to watch. And you know what? You know, it's kind of such a contrast to the LA team of 2012, because you remember in 2012, that title run was really defined by that raw eighth seed's improbable dominance. I mean, nobody thought that the Kings would win the championship. This year, they were a three seed in the Western Conference. But if you go back to 2012, I mean, they were an eighth seed and were able to just dominate and win the Stanley Cup. This year, they really, you know, the Kings were on the radar. Maybe not the favorite to win the whole thing, but they were at least on the radar this year. And they did it with the resiliency of a ball club that really was impressive. I mean, all those game seven wins, it was remarkable to watch. So, you know, second championship in 3 years. Do you think this is the start of a dynasty, Alex? Got to ask you that.
Absolutely, Al.
You think so?
Absolutely. It shows that they've got the right coach and the right GM over there. Shows that no matter what the seed is in hockey, it's not like the NBA where the one seeds are going.
You kind of know.
You don't really
see
an eight seed in the NBA going far.
Right.
When it comes to the NHL, there's so much puck luck, like you said. There's so much grinding. I think absolutely, Al. I think absolutely this is a Kings dynasty.
We'll see. Well, you certainly can't argue with two championships in the past 3 years. So, all right. Well, let's hit the second break. When we come back, we'll talk a little Tigers. Also, Hall of Famer Tony Gwynn sadly passes away. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. I want to remind you all that Current Sports TV tapes this Wednesday evening. Yes, at 6 p.m. I'll be sitting down with MHSAA official Dan Jimenez. Yes, we'll be diving into an interesting topic, the world of referee abuse. Yes, you all know when you go to a little league game or, you know, even a professional game, they probably get it the most, to be honest. Well, maybe little league because, you know, parents are pretty crazy about their kids when they're playing sports.
Al, do you have some stories on that growing up?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. My stepdad was ruthless, man. When I played high school hoops, I mean, some words I can't say here on the air, he would, if he didn't agree with a call on my team, he would go nuts, bonkers, dude. And you know what? Tim Elkins, one of the, of course, outstanding directors on Current Sports TV, he has an interesting story when he almost got thrown out the gym for heckling a ref. So he's definitely had a firsthand account on that too. So yeah, I mean, it happens. You know, you're very passionate about your kid out there. So it's going to be interesting to see how Dan deals with that, because he's one of the refs who deal with that type of heckling. I've seen it happen with Dan before, and he just, you know, like a typical referee, just ignores it and just deals with it. So it's going to be interesting. Again, if you want to be a part of that live studio audience, sign up online for free at WKAR.org. And also want to mention this, Alex, it was a great time at the Emmys this weekend. It was just, I was nominated for an Emmy for Current Sports, and, you know, just being in that room with all of that talent, it was remarkable. It was great to have, you know, Gary Reed, the director here at WKAR. He took me down there along with Luke and, you know, Brett King. It was a fun time, man, and just to be nominated, it was truly humbling. And to meet, I mean, we're talking about cats like Bill Bonds. I got to see Bill Bonds. He was a table away from us. Bill Bonds, a legendary anchor for Channel 7 Action News in Detroit. He got the Governor's Award. Glenda Lewis was down there along with Diana Lewis. It was really cool meeting all of those unbelievable people. Ryan Slocum, our homeboy from Flint, he took home two Emmys. It was a great time, wow. And I look forward to attending that event more times in the future. So just want to mention that. It was a great time. All right, and some sad news in the world of baseball, though, Alex. Of course, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, Tony Gwynn, Baseball Hall of Famer Tony Gwynn, he has sadly passed away at the age of 54 due to a battle with cancer. Again, he was known as Mr. Padre, and the San Diego Padres, they confirmed on Twitter today that he had sadly passed away. He was elected to the National Baseball Hall of Fame in 2007, and you look at his stats, I mean, they are truly, truly amazing, and you see just why he was a Hall of Famer. 3,141 hits. His batting average was .338, 135 home runs. I mean, just a remarkable player, a remarkable guy. He was known, you know, kind of like Magic Johnson for that just that uncanny smile. You know, he was always smiling, and he was a really, really special player. And he was always big on also giving back in the world of baseball. He attended college at San Diego State University, where he played both college baseball and college basketball for the San Diego State Aztecs. And he became the head coach over there. He became a coach over there and really was a great teacher of the game as well. Sad news. Sad news there, Alex.
The saddest part about it is how he passed away, Al. And that has to deal with baseball players and chewing tobacco and throat cancer and things like that. It's horrible, man. And the habit, it's not that they're picking up and they're going, yeah, I want to do some chewing tobacco. It's just a part of the game. It's that natural hanging in the dugout. You got to chew on something a little bit. You kind of get your muscles going a little bit. There's more to it than just, I want to try chewing tobacco. It's part of the baseball culture, Al.
And you get it. It has nicotine in it. It's tobacco. I mean, and you kind of get addicted to it. And once you start, yeah. I mean, you can't stop, you know. And, you know, it's just a sad thing because one of our great workers here on Current State, Kevin, he actually, before the show started, and they talked about the reports on how he got cancer, and they said it started in the saliva in his mouth, which, you know, if you look at some of the highlights, looking at a lot of the highlights this morning before I came into work on ESPN Sports Center, I mean, you look at a lot of the highlights, even the pitcher here, the head pitcher here on CNN, you can see that there's a big watt of chewing tobacco in his mouth there. It's hard not to see Tony Gwynn, you know, a highlight of Tony Gwynn without seeing him chew on that stuff, but... You know, it's sad stuff. He was only 54 years old. The day after Father's Day, it's truly sad news. But, you know, he will be remembered as one of the greatest to ever play. So, Tony Gwynn passing away. Really quickly, Leah O'Connor. How about Leah O'Connor? She's a friend of the show. And Leah O'Connor, she took home a win at the track and field championships. Banner night for her. She won the 3,000-meter steeplechase on Friday at the 2014 NCAA Outdoor Track and Field Championships. Man, is she good. You know, and she's so, you know, when we had her here on the show, we had her on here twice, I believe. And when you talk to Leah, she's so just focused, laser focused, but also just the sweetest kid you ever want to talk to. She is great. So congrats to Leah. It's a pleasure, you know, covering her because she's one of the talents here at just one of the many talents here at MSU Athletics. And how about the Tigers, man? The Tigers.
Yeah, I actually went to the game on Saturday.
Did you? Okay.
Went to the game, and as much as that game should have been a blowout, Al, they were up 11, 12-2, 12-3.
Right.
The relief pitching, they only win 12-9.
Yeah,
so
the relief pitching, yeah.
I tweeted earlier in the day that the Tigers look like they're back. And as the game went on, the less I think that they're back out.
Maybe I look like a prophet, though, man. Well, they won the series. That's big. That's a big – I mean, you come off that Max Scherzer performance, right. I'd say it could be a turning point, and you win a series against the Minnesota Twins. That's nothing to hang your head
on. Win's a win.
A win's a win.
But
that's
realize
all that
they won in, I'd say, lucky fashion. I would.
How was the atmosphere? Was it pretty packed on Saturday?
Yeah, it was packed, man. They're still selling seats. I think that even though they're losing, I think – just baseball in Detroit, it's kind of a new mark since the early 2000s. Ever since Maglio left his mark here and Ivan and Pudge Rodriguez came here, it's a totally different atmosphere.
Yeah, I got to get out to a game because I haven't been out to a game yet. You know, it's crazy. I was reading a report that ticket sales have actually dropped from last season when it comes to just the MLB as a whole.
Really?
That's another discussion for another day, though. It's interesting stuff. All right. Well, thanks to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKR East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic start to your week. Happy Monday. And as always, be easy, people.